deep in the heart of flyover country, this is Spin Sold Separately.
How you doing, everyone? Welcome back to Spin Sold Separately. I am JD. I hope you all had a wonderful Thanksgiving weekend. I know I sure did. I spent a disproportionate amount of time watching football. I spent an embarrassing amount of time sleeping. I tell you, this new work schedule, it's all of 3 hours a week. And I can't catch up. I feel so tired all the time, and it's 3 days a week. I'm getting to work 1 hour earlier. That's the only difference. And apparently I'm getting too old for this stuff, because I slept so much. I think I slept, what was it, on Saturday night? I think I slept, it was over 10 hours. And I took naps Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I remember falling asleep in the middle of the day all 3 days. And I don't know. I don't have any excuses. I mean, the food coma from Thanksgiving can only last, I would say, the rest of the night. I only had one plateful. Now, it was a big one, because my brother-in-law is an absolutely amazing cook. And again, my sincerest thanks to him and my sister for hosting our amazing family Thanksgiving. It was so great, so much fun. And I hope you were able to enjoy a good amount of time with your family or your friends or whoever you celebrated with, and that your food was half as good as mine. Because I got to tell you, my brother-in-law, I don't know how he does it. He's got like 7 things going at once. They all come out at the exact same time, piping hot, ready to go. And it's all so unbelievably good. So whoever entertained, whether it was you or another member of your family or friends, I hope you got to enjoy some amazing food, some amazing time. And now we kind of settle into December here. We're into the craziness of the holiday season. Like I said, I did an awful lot of online shopping over the weekend. I left some things in the carts because my eyes are almost always bigger than my bank account. Even when I feel like I'm getting a good price, which, you know, they can manipulate those sale prices pretty good too and make you think you're getting a better deal than you are, but I digress. So yeah, did a lot of shopping, did a fair amount of, what do you call when you leave something in the cart? Is that like the virtual equivalent of putting it back on the shelf, you know, emptying the cart after you've added it, and then pretty soon you've got a cart that's, you know, 4 times the amount of money you would ever be able to wrestle up, and then you got to start putting stuff back. Did a lot of that too, but, you know, you got to have some fun too. So we're into the holiday season. We're into the cold of December. It was single digits up here in the cornfields today, and it looks like it's going to be that way for a while. So unfortunately, that nice, long, mild fall we all enjoyed looks like it's in the rearview mirror for good, but you know, we're into December now. But one final happy Thanksgiving to all of you. Whether you had to travel or not, thankfully I don't have to travel for the holidays, the Thanksgiving included. Most of my family is right here in town. Most of them are here in town, so our travels are very minimal, but I always hear these horror stories about what goes on in airports during weeks like Thanksgiving. And I follow Michelle Tafoya on X, and she apparently had a less than pleasant travel experience this Thanksgiving weekend. Something about 3 hours of delay and having to deplane twice, and something about smoke, and then they're on another plane, and oh my goodness, I'm just sitting at home on my couch lamenting the misfortunes of those that have to travel on weeks like this, because I know these airports get so overwhelmed, and all it takes is one bad weather system to really gum the whole system up. And I read that through one time, and it just reminded me how blessed I am, not only to have the family that I do, but that, you know, a lot of us are so close and the travel involved is minimal at most for most of us. So that was just one more reminder of how lucky I am when it comes to my family and their locale. I hope no one obeyed the legacy media. I hope those that were absent for other reasons. If anybody missed your gathering, I'm sure some of that went on where people stayed away from family because of politics. And I hope that didn't happen to you. I hope most people came to their senses in the days leading up to Thanksgiving and did what they should have done, which was spend that time with the people that care about them the most, that they care about the most. And sometimes we need to be reminded of that, that, you know, politics isn't everything. And especially when it comes to holidays like Thanksgiving, I hope everybody was there. I hope the number of people that took the legacy media's advice and told half their family and friends to screw off, I hope that was kept to a minimum. Sadly, we did lose a member of my wife's family last week. I know every family has that person that shows up at all the holidays and is the one that provides the levity. Tends to be the loudest voice in the room, always has a bunch of jokes to tell, some of them probably not totally family holiday appropriate, but that's never stopped them before and won't ever stop them in the future. My wife's family lost that member of their family just before Thanksgiving. To be expected, he had been diagnosed with a very, very aggressive form of dementia, and it took your breath away how fast it took him from us. And he is up with God now and probably telling one of his dirty jokes as we speak to the rolling eyes of our faithfully departed. But it was very sad. I mean, it was, like I said, it wasn't unexpected, but just that dementia, especially this form of it, that just it just takes them so quickly. It truly is the devil's disease to watch somebody that you've known for so many years and that had that outward personality that just brought life to every room, and to just watch that almost systematically be taken away from them as the weeks and months go on, it's so painful to watch, and I'm sure excruciating to suffer through yourself. And I don't wish that disease on my worst enemy. It is of the devil, dementia and all forms of it, where that person that you knew, the person that they were, slowly fades away, and just it turns the person that you knew into someone you don't even recognize, someone that doesn't even recognize you. Everything that made them, their personality, their memories, it's all taken away. It is such an awful, awful disease. And one of my many prayers for the future is one day we are able to make some kind of inroads on these later in life mental declines that really do rob a person of who they were and robs a family of a family member. Even while they're still alive, they just become somebody you don't even recognize, and it is so heartbreaking and so I don't know what the word is, but that was tough. He was an incredibly good man, very, very funny, always made me feel comfortable. Rest in peace. Quick correction on Rush's Thanksgiving story. Not so much a correction, but I had a little more time over the weekend to explore a couple more of his, you know, the first Thanksgiving stories, and I suggested a YouTube video that I had watched just of him on his radio show. This was from several years ago. I think I said it was like 14 minutes. And that one was fine, but I, over the weekend, came across one that he had done just before he passed away, the very last one of these he did. And it's a little bit longer. It spanned three segments of his radio show, but it is worth absolutely every second. It is 24 minutes and 37 seconds from a YouTube feed that had the name Matt Jantzen, J-A-N-T-Z-E-N. Yeah, that's how I tracked it down. It was amazing. It, again, worth every second. I really, really encourage you to go back and listen to it. It was right before he passed away, and it was incredibly powerful, as he always made it. So, RIP Rush. Boy, would we love to have your take on what's happening today. But thankfully, those moments that he gave us, all of his wisdom throughout the years, and thankfully, it's all still with us. At least a good chunk of it is, and that part is definitely worth your time. A couple more pieces on a couple of Trump's cabinet. I have learned through this process that if the establishment in Washington is angry with an appointment or a nomination, then I'm happy with it. And I'll give you an example here. Dr. Jay Bhattacharya has been nominated to lead the NIH. Now, this is probably not a name you're familiar with, but thankfully, because of the people that I have come to rely on and trust for my news over the last, you know, over the last 5 to 10 years, thankfully, I did know this name. And boy, am I excited to see him in the mix here. He was one of the three authors of what was called the Great Barrington Declaration. This was an open letter that was issued in October 2020 by three infectious disease doctors, Dr. Bhattacharya being one of them, regarding the COVID lockdowns and the COVID policies that were being pushed. It's far more in depth than this, but I'm going to break it down to the brass tacks in that it suggested that what we were doing as a society, and really as a planet at the time, with very few exceptions, was not the way to go. These three doctors of this Great Barrington Declaration suggested that we protect the vulnerable, because obviously we had figured out by October 2020 that this disease was not universally dangerous, but was dangerous to certain groups, i.e. the elderly, the infirmed. We had figured out by then that this was not something that was a great danger to younger, you know, basically average healthy, you know, otherwise healthy people, and that we needed to protect the vulnerable, but everyone else needed to get back to normal, that this was going to have to run its course. Younger, healthier people were going to just have to get it and fight it off and build immunity through their own immune system, and that's how we were going to defeat this thing. Well, this approach was widely and, in many cases, viciously criticized by the medical establishment, led by Dr. Anthony Fauci, who at the time headed the NIH. Fauci had gone so far as to have Bhattacharya and his colleagues censored, calling this Great Barrington Declaration dangerous and misinformation, and it was going to get people killed. And obviously, at the time, a good portion of our population took whatever Anthony Fauci said as scripture, and this really damaged the reputations of these three doctors that were involved in this project. Thankfully, they have since recovered their reputations, because they proved to be 100% right. Everything that they had, I won't get into the details of it here. It's very easy to find online. Great Barrington Declaration. They were spot on. Their recommendations, that what they had observed to that point, and their recommendations on how to handle it going forward, all of it proved out to be 100% right. And oh, the irony that an institution like the NIH, led by Anthony Fauci, that tried to tear down Dr. Jay Bhattacharya and his colleagues, that now Bhattacharya is going to be leading that very same institution that at one point, under Fauci's leadership, sought to end him. I couldn't be happier. This is going to mean many things, not the least of which is more transparency in medical testing. And this is something that he has made a hallmark of his work, more effort to reproduce results by doing what's known as redundant testing, rather than just running with a single result. Which, one thing that I've heard him talk about is our medical establishment has gotten too comfortable with taking a single study and just running with the results, rather than taking the time to redundantly test that same theory, trying to reproduce results. That's a very big thing in the medical field, is okay, you came up with these results. Let's see if we can reproduce them and recreate the same results. And we have gotten away from that as a society. And that is one of the focuses that he will bring back to the NIH, which is going to be better for everyone. Anthony Fauci hopelessly politicized this entire organization. My hope is that there's enough credibility left in it to be saved. I am confident that the expertise that is obviously in that organization and the good people that are obviously still there under better, more health-oriented, less politically-oriented leadership will have a chance to thrive and bring that organization back to the level of credibility that it once enjoyed. Because we need it. We need institutions like the NIH and the CDC. We need them, and we need to be able to follow their advice without having to dig into some of this stuff ourselves. Because who has time, honestly? You know, you can say, and I've been guilty of this, well, do your own research. It's like, well, there's only so many hours in the day, okay? A lot of us have day jobs. A lot of us have kids. A lot of us have hobbies. And by the time all that stuff is done, you got about 12 minutes that aren't accounted for on the average day. And how much of your own health research, especially high-level stuff, can you really do yourself? You know, these institutions exist for a reason. We need to be able to trust their recommendations, and we need to be confident that those recommendations are coming from sound testing, sound results, and sound advice. So hopefully we can get back to that. One more nomination that has the entire Washington establishment literally upside down is Kash Patel being nominated to lead the FBI, which oddly is not a position that is currently open. The existing FBI director who was nominated by Trump, Christopher Wray, actually has, I believe it's 2 more years, maybe 3 or 4. I can't remember how many. He's got several years left on his. It's up to a 10-year appointment. And it's not often that these directors stay the entire 10 years, but that is the, I guess that's the limit. So Christopher Wray is still the FBI director, but Kash Patel has been nominated to replace him. He held several high-level positions in Trump's first term. He was chief of staff for the Secretary of Defense or the Defense Department. He was deputy director of national intelligence and senior director for counterterrorism at the National Security Council. This particular individual was instrumental in uncovering the embarrassingly corrupt involvement of the FBI and the CIA to a lesser extent in the Russiagate hoax, including the, and this is from a from an article by Emma Colton that I found on Fox News, that Patel was instrumental in discovering the, quote, improper use of surveillance, unquote, against Trump and his campaign by both the FBI and the DOJ. So he's clearly qualified. So why the backlash? Why are so many of Trump's appointees being treated like the end of the world by the legacy media and by the establishment in Washington? Why is that? Well, the answer is Tulsi, Elon, Pete Hegseth, Patel, Bhattacharya, these are all outsiders. They're all establishment DC outsiders. And the term being thrown around to describe this cabinet, this group, is disruptors. And I love that term because that quagmire, that swamp in Washington, DC has gotten so drunk on its own power. I can't wait for these people to get in there and shake things up. I'm not saying burn the whole thing down. And of course, that's what the alarmists out there are saying, is these people are just going to go in there and just destroy everything and there'll be nothing left. No, they're going to go in there with a different approach and try to get these organizations, these institutions, back to what they were designed to be. And in the process, hopefully shrink this administrative state that has become so far beyond what it was ever designed to be. And I got to tell you, this group of outsiders going to DC to basically take our capital back from this bureaucracy, this is what I've been waiting my entire political adult life for. I mean, again, ask yourself the question, why is the establishment so angry? The FBI hacks and political operatives like Andrew McCabe and John Bolton and John Brennan, all of whom have abused the power of their offices for political gain. Why are they so angry? I look at this, is a one-time chance to upend this bureaucratic apple cart once and for all. And this is for the benefit of all. We don't want a government or a Department of Justice that just turns its fire on one man or one political party because it doesn't like him or her or them. No one wants that. That's bad for everyone, because one day, you know, you might think they're on your side, but one day that shoe will be on the other foot. And do you want to be on the receiving end of the DOJ when it decides it doesn't like what you're saying or what you're promoting? All the accusations that the left has made of that Trump's going to weaponize the government and he's going to use the DOJ against his opponents. This is all stuff that the current establishment is already 100% guilty of. Targeting Trump. Targeting Republicans. The evidence is out there. This isn't a conspiracy theory. What segment of the left has faced the scrutiny and the targeting that many on the right have? You can see what they do in the face of it. They run and create their own social media network because they can't handle the pushback. That tells you all you need to know of the level of pushback they've ever had to face, which is none. There is some very pro-Hamas, pro-Hezbollah, anti-American, anti-Supreme Court, anti-law sects of the left that have never faced anything close to this level of attack and targeting that Trump and many on the right have. And you can't have this. You can't have this one-sided justice system where we go after political opponents at the highest level. But banana republics do this. And, oh, by the way, Trump has never done this. He had every opportunity to go after Hillary Clinton when he won in 2016, and before he even took office, he said, that's not something I'm going to do. He's had it done to him. The left's projection on this is just, it's just off the charts. Why would we want a bloated, uncontrolled, unelected bureaucracy that just continues to wield power it was never supposed to have? Go back and read Article 2 of the Constitution about the presidency and the executive branch and how small it was supposed to be by design. Because the founders felt that the executive in all other forms of government, aka the king, the queen, the monarch, whoever was in charge, controlled far too much power. Billionaire investor Mark Andreessen had a great tweet. He basically said, you need to be careful and you need to be suspicious of the people that are so angry about shrinking the administrative state and who is defending practices like this. I'll get you the exact tweet here because he said it much better than I can. Andreessen said, quote, "It's interesting to see who is standing up in favor of unlimited, unaccountable, and unappealable, unconstitutional power wielded by unelected bureaucrats and rogue politicians. It's interesting to see who's standing up in favor of that." It brilliantly stated, and I'm glad I'm not one of them. I don't want to be one that's standing up to defend all of these layers of bureaucracy that are openly, have already openly, and are openly talking about doing it again, standing between Trump, who was elected by the majority of the people, and him being able to install the people that he wants at the behest of his voters to do the work that the majority of the country voted for that needs to be done. Be very suspicious of the people defending the status quo on this one. This disturbing, and I don't have the word to disturbing doesn't cut it. This story out of Oregon, the St. Helens School District, this is a story that gets more grotesque with every layer that's peeled away. I'm going to run through this whole thing here. It will blow your mind how far-reaching this story has become. And, oh my goodness, the victims of this story, they're all kids. They're families. Oh, I'm gritting my teeth already. This story first broke on November 12th, and I got a lot of this summation here on a Yahoo News story by a man named Matt Rawlings. Two teachers, This is on November 12th. Two teachers in this St. Helens school district, which is just outside Portland, Oregon, one current teacher and one retired, were arrested on sexual abuse charges. The current teacher, his name is Eric Stearns, 46 years old, was charged with 7 counts of second-degree sexual abuse and 1 count of third-degree sexual abuse. The other, the retired teacher, Mark Collins, 64, was charged with 2 counts of second-degree sexual abuse and 1 count of attempted second-degree sexual abuse. Now, these allegations between these two teachers go back as far as 2015. That is 9 years ago that these allegations involving these two men go back to. Stearns alone is accused of sexually abusing 6 students, with, again, the first allegation going back to 2015. Collins is accused of abusing 2 students and attempting to abuse a third. There's also another stomach-churning allegation involving Collins, where students are reporting hearing what sounded like, quote, pornography playing on a device while he was in a school. I'm going to remind you, our justice system is founded on the premise of innocent until proven guilty, and I will respect that. I am pointed in my discussion about this because, well, the next example here is somebody that has already been convicted of this in the same school district, and I'm having a hard time maintaining my impartiality here. But remember, innocent until proven guilty. Most of these, except for this one I'm about to get into here, are still allegations, and allegations can be wrong. So we do need to leave room for that, but this is the story. Now, this same school district had another teacher by the name of Kyle Roblewski. Not sure if I'm pronouncing that right. Roblewski. He was found guilty of sexually abusing a 17-year-old and was sentenced back in 2019. And this very same school district paid out a $3.5 million settlement in regards to his sexually lewd and criminal activity with students. Now, this investigation into these two teachers, Stearns and Collins, started in September of this year, September of 2024. Now, again, the allegations against these two go back 9 years. This investigation was just started in September of 2024. Now, Collins has been retired for a few years now. Stearns is still an active teacher, and Stearns was allowed to teach while this investigation was ongoing. I'm going to remind you, he's been accused of sexually abusing 6 students. And while this investigation was ongoing, this school board, this superintendent, this school district allowed him to continue to teach. This is absolutely despicable. And obviously, parents were beyond outraged once the details of this started coming out. Now, these teachers were charged on November 12th, and on November 13th, a room full of these justifiably outraged parents filled the school board meeting room on the night of November 13th. And I'm going to play you the news story on it in a minute here. The smugness of this school board, of this superintendent, the degree to which they just wanted the whole thing to just go away, like wake up from a bad dream. The dereliction of duty here, it is almost impossible to grasp. Here is the news story from a local news organization in regards to that meeting at the school board the night of November 13th.
In more than 20 years of reporting, I've never seen a community rise up against a school board with more anger, outrage, and contempt. They're calling for everyone on the St. Helens School Board to resign. One of the teachers in question is accused of sexually abusing students for several years, and they want to know why he was allowed to teach at school for the first 2 months of the school year while he was under investigation. And for this community, it's just the latest case involving teachers or coaches accused of preying on their children.
No outburst. We're giving you time to speak. Let us speak.
In St. Helens, the school board meeting was contentious from the start.
Respect our kids in school.
One more burst, you'll be asked to be removed.
I'm sorry, but you can remove a parent, but you can't remove a teacher?
Anger and frustration from every parent here after police arrested two teachers on Tuesday accused of sexually abusing students.
I am so angry about this. Furious.
Community members demanded action from the school board after they say they stood by for years as teachers in question abused kids, and accusations were ignored. They noted one of the accused, a 46-year-old choir teacher named Eric Stearns. Police arrested him Tuesday after a two-month investigation. In court Wednesday, Stearns pleaded not guilty to charges that he sexually abused six different students between 2015 and January of this year. To many parents here, words from Superintendent Scott Stockwell rang hollow.
Our first and foremost commitment has always been the well-being and safety of our students. And the news has been devastating for all of us.
Board members acknowledged that they knew Stearns had been under police investigation since September, but allowed him to keep teaching until his arrest.
So do any of you guys have anything to say to the parents, to the victims?
We've made statements, and, you know...
Parents, including the mom of an alleged victim, say the board's willful inaction goes much deeper than that.
We also had police reports, and I talked to the principal, and she brushed it off like it was nothing.
Former State Senator Rachel Armitage also took board members to task.
I want to know why this educator was allowed to cause harm to students for an additional 8 years, as well as apparently several others.
This week, police also arrested a second St. Helens teacher on abuse allegations, 64-year-old Mark Collins, who's now retired. His charges include two counts of sexual abuse in the second degree. And parents here say there are more teachers and coaches their kids have raised alarms over, they say only to be rebuffed by school and district officials. On this night, they said, it stops now.
You need to step down. You need to take accountability.
Stop! Parents here say this is far from over after tonight. They say they're going to continue fighting against what's been happening in their school district to protect their kids. Collins, the retired teacher accused of sexual abuse, is due in court on Thursday. In St. Helens, Catherine Cook, KGW News.
I just decided to play the whole thing. That was a news report from KGW News, obviously an outfit in the St. Helens School District / Portland, Oregon area. I'm even more angry hearing that. That's the second time I've watched that all the way through. I'm even more angry this time. The two voices you heard, both of them male, one of them was school board chair Ryan Scholl. He was the one that demanded that one of the angry parents stop outbursting or he would have him removed. He slammed that little gavel of his down like he owned the state. The utter disdain that these people have for the very people that vote them into these positions of power. There are parents sitting in that room knowing that that multiple students have been sexually abused under these people's watch. And that jerk, Ryan Scholl, has the nerve to try to slap them down while they exhibit what apparently to him was an unacceptable level of outrage at these people's complete incompetence. The other person you heard there was Scott Stockwell, the superintendent, who said, oh, we've made statements, and oh, the primary concern of ours is the safety of our students. Well, clearly not, Superintendent Stockwell. 9 years. 9 years this went on. And these people had the nerve to sit at that school board desk and threaten to throw parents out of the room while putting up with sexual abusers, allegedly, for 9 years. When this board chair, Ryan Scholl, was asked specifically why he did not, or why they did not, suspend these teachers immediately, blamed law enforcement and said that law enforcement told them that suspending them was not required or not necessary. A blatant lie that was completely refuted by the police's own body cam footage of the meeting as it took place when the subpoena was delivered. Never once did law enforcement say not to suspend the teacher, as if they'd have any stance to make such a recommendation. This school board chair, Ryan Scholl, tried to pass his dereliction of duty off on local law enforcement, who, oh, by the way, are the only reason that this finally came to light. After this meeting, protests ensued, closing school early the next day, which was Thursday the 14th, and it kept them closed through the following Monday. On November 15th, high school principal Katie Wagner and Superintendent Scott Stockwell, he of We've Made Statements fame, were placed on administrative leave. Scholl, the disgusting school board chair, resigned in full-on disgrace. Fast forward a bit to November 21st, Principal Wagner from the high school was placed under investigation herself for failing to report safety concerns to law enforcement. The chief of police, a man named Joseph Hogue, said no reports had been communicated to them since 2019. On the very same day, police announced an investigation into still another teacher, this one at the middle school in the same district, for, quote, criminal conduct for, quote, offensive physical contact, end quote, with students. A middle school teacher. The next day, November 22nd, two more employees from the high school in the same district were being investigated for allegations of sexual abuse. On that same day, November 22nd, Superintendent Stockwell himself was placed under investigation for failing to report child safety concerns. In other words, endangering children. The superintendent of this school district, under investigation for failing to report child safety concerns. If you're keeping score at home, that is six investigations in all, plus the original two with the two named teachers, with allegations in these additional investigations ranging from additional abuse to mandatory reporters failing to do their duty to protect students. The English language does not house words for how I feel about this. The teachers, the principal, the board, that disgusting board chairman, and the superintendent, they all failed these kids. These children that they are there to protect. These are trusted people in schools and in communities. They betrayed that trust in every conceivable way. And we are going to follow this story because it is so disturbing. It is so hell-spawned. Justice must be served here. These poor kids that have gone through hell. This is obvious. I mean, you're talking 9 years. How many full classes went through this school district with this going on? Yes, innocent until proven guilty, but this has all the appearances of a total and complete system failure from top to bottom. Now, a quick thought on the news of today, specifically of Joe Biden's pardon of his son Hunter. Now, I'm not surprised at all. And to be honest, I don't blame him for doing it. I would have done the same for my son, almost irregardless of the circumstances. I mean, you can be mad at it if you want, but as it sits right now, it's a perk of being president. He's not the first, and he will not be the last. This is one of the few vestiges of unimpeded power that was awarded to the president via the Constitution, by the founders. And again, you can dislike it. You can disagree with my take on it. In a vacuum here, I don't blame Joe Biden for pardoning his son. I would have done the same for my son. What bothers me are other aspects of this, and there are three of them that I can put my finger on. Number one is the scope of this pardon. This pardon, as it is written, runs from January 1st, 2014 through December 1st, 2024. Almost 11 years. Now, some might be asking, well, what is the significance of January 1st, 2014? Why go back that far? Because this obviously goes way further back than the crimes that he has been tried and convicted of to this point. Well, Hunter Biden became a board member of that Ukrainian oil company, Burisma, that we have talked about in the past, in April of 2014. Which, of course, the legacy media will jump all over and say, you're just politicizing it. And blah, 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 blah. You know what? If you want us to stop noticing things that don't smell right, stop doing things that don't smell right. I mean, what are we trying to hide here? Like I said, this goes well beyond the gun crime and the tax crime of which he's already been convicted. Again, the old Republicans pounce. You know, it's not the fact that this obviously looks incredibly suspicious. That's not the problem. The problem is that we're noticing that it looks incredibly suspicious. Who knows? Once the new DOJ gets in January and there's a new sheriff in town, who knows what we're going to discover of all of these foreign dealings and how high it went. And I don't know. Maybe there's nothing. Boy, it looks like they're trying to hide something by going back that far with this kind of blanket pardon that spans almost 11 years. So that's the first thing that bugs me about it. The second thing is Joe Biden's repeated claims, as well as his press secretaries, that he would under no circumstances pardon Hunter. And the sound bites are out there. They're everywhere. I heard them on Ben Shapiro's show today. I heard them on Megan's show today. As late as June of this year, Joe Biden was claiming he would never interfere with this. He would not be issuing any kind of pardon to his son. Nothing has changed since then. Every justification that he listed in his explanation that came out shortly after the pardon was made official, every justification that he listed in that explanation happened long before June of this year, when he's on the record saying that he wouldn't do it. Karine Jean-Pierre, his press secretary, got asked the question so frequently she got annoyed by it because she felt like she'd answered it so many times. And basically her final answer on it was no, it's always been no, it is no now, and it will always be no. Well, until it's yes. Which leads me to the third thing about this that bothers me is the predictable nature of the legacy media believing him wholeheartedly. Nobody with half a brain believed for a second that Joe Biden was going to let his son rot in prison for the rest of his life, the rest of Joe Biden's life, at least. And again, as a father, I don't blame him. I would have done the same. But I wouldn't have sat there and lied about it for the better part of a year. There were different ways that could have been handled. He could have said, I'm not going to comment on it. It's, you know, we're going to let the case run its course. I don't interfere with ongoing investigations or court cases. I don't want to get involved. He could have dodged it any number of ways without specifically saying over and over again, no, I'm not going to do it. No,
no, not going to do it.
Well, of course, the legacy media bought it hook, line, and sinker. And they went so far as to say, In buying this story that was incredibly unbelievable from the start, well, they ran with, this is what makes him so much better than Trump. Look at how presidential he is. Look at how far above politics. He's letting his own DOJ prosecute his own son. And a lot of these media people, a lot of these legacy media talking heads actually believed him because they truly do feel like Democrats are above this. This is what I mean by blind spots. When you are so immersed in your own bubble and only surrounded by people that think, talk, and act just like you, Your blind spots can grow to the size of small planets. And here is another example of that. And of course, now they're just trying to explain it all away. Well, he had to do it because Trump's going to come in and do all these horrible things. Or Trump's going to come in and, you know, their biggest fear is he's going to come in and just blanket pardon all of these January 6th defendants, some of whom have been in prison for a ridiculously long time, given the charges against them. You know, well, he did it first. Yeah, Biden did it first because Trump's going to come in and do it even worse. So they're already using the because Trump excuse, even though Trump still doesn't take office for another month and a half. Like I said, Joe Biden's statement is out there. He says that Hunter was unfairly targeted by the Department of Justice that Joe Biden is currently in charge of. I still can't make sense of that one. He says that no one else would have been prosecuted for this. Well, Hunter was prosecuted for tax crimes as well as a gun crime. He lied while filling out the paperwork for his gun. Now, I mean, what things do Democrats love more than taxes and gun control? These are the two issues at hand here. And here is the president of the United States saying that no one else would have been prosecuted for this. He was only prosecuted because he's Joe Biden's son. He flat out lied on his application to purchase a gun, saying that he wasn't addicted to drugs. That's one of the questions on the form. At the time, he was very much addicted to drugs. He lied on the form and said that he wasn't, because if you mark yes, you're not going to get the gun. He says Republicans have hopelessly politicized the Department of Justice. I mean, you cannot make this stuff up. The gaslighting and the projection here is beyond comparison. Every time I think they've gaslit us and projected to the max, like you can't get any further, they break new ground the very next day. It is what it is. Like I said, I don't blame him for doing it. I will sit here and admit, and I might be in the minority here, but I would have done it for my own son, like I said, almost regardless of the circumstances. Now, there are some out there that would say, well, that's not parenting, or that's not teaching them anything, or I would have done it differently. And you know what? Everyone's entitled to their own opinion on this. This is a touchy thing. Me, personally, I would have done it, but I wouldn't have lied about it for 9 months leading up to it, very specifically saying that I wouldn't do it, only knowing the entire... He didn't just come up with this over Thanksgiving. He knew when these trials were first started that he was going to pardon him of anything he was found guilty of. He knew it the entire time, which is probably why he let these investigations and these trials go on the way they did, because he knew the entire time he had this pardon power in his back pocket. And I think he intended the whole time to use it if necessary. And again, I don't blame him for it. I would have done the same. Just don't lie about it for 9 months and look the American people in the eye and use it as part of a reason to get elected, at least at the time, that no, you respect the justice system and you're not going to get involved. You're not going to pardon your son if he's found guilty. Well, maybe Joe Biden isn't the arbiter of everything true and beautiful that the legacy media and the Democrats have made him out to be. So, what's up next? I really want to get into that deep dive on California and Florida, because now that I think we're down to one remaining House seat in California that's still not called yet. It is, I just looked at it a minute ago, Republicans 220, Democrats 214. There is one House seat left in California that is not yet decided, but the Republicans are going to have either a 5 or 7 seat majority in the House, depending on how that last race turns out. And then there's going to be some seats that need to be refilled by some of the Congress people that have been appointed to cabinet positions. So that's going to muck things up a little bit for a while. But I really do want to get into that comparison on all levels, on taxes, on budgets, on education, on quality of life, on everything, because they are so geographically similar. I mean, California and Florida are two incredibly desirable places to live, just geographically speaking, but their politics have pushed them into opposite corners on the political spectrum. So I think a good, healthy comparison between the two is warranted. And then I've mentioned a lot of other things we're working on here too. So really glad y'all came back after Thanksgiving. I know today was a rough first day back for me. very busy time of year in my line of work, and it's going to be a very busy month. So if I don't get two out a week here through the end of the year, I apologize. Not that I'm going to disappear for the entire month, but I might be closer to one a week instead of two through December here. I'll do my best to keep it at two, but there might be a week or two where it just gets too crazy. The day job has to take precedent, but yeah, once this month is over, we'll get back to, we will definitely turn the page on a lot of the political stuff. I mean, we'll obviously follow the inauguration and everything that gets going there, but hopefully we can get into some of those outside of politics stories I've been talking about basically since the beginning, and we're still adding to it. I had a couple more things come up this week that I was talking about with people, and God, that'd be a good idea for a show. And it's like, you know what? You're right. And I write it down in my little notes. It's already illegibly out of control, but we got all kinds of content here going to be coming your way. We're going to get more creative with some of the things we're doing here. I got all kinds of sound bites here I need to explain. I haven't even touched these yet, but these would be kind of fun to start getting into. I mean, I don't even know. What is this here? Oh, applaud. Well, thank you. I mean, what else do we got here? What's this? Oh, God. Oh, I could lose another hour here messing around with this. We're going to wrap here. Thank you so much for joining me. Again, this is Spin Sold Separately, and I am JD. Don't be a jerk. Humans don't deserve dogs. And I'll talk to you next time.